You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, powered by Interstate Batteries. From your truck to your trail camera, Interstate Batteries has you covered. Visit your local Interstate Battery store today or online at interstatebatteries.com. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Welcome to the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast, brought to you by Exodus Trail Cameras, the number one podcast for bow hunting product information and hunting stories from across the nation. And now, here's your nine-fingered host, Dan Johnson.
Welcome back to the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast, brought to you by Exodus Trail Cameras. Visit ExodusOutdoorGear.com and enter the discount code 9Fingers when you check out, and you can save $20 on your trail camera purchase. That's 9Fingers, the number 9 followed by the word fingers, and save $20 on your trail camera purchase. Now, today, we're going to be talking with a suburban bow hunter. His name is Justin Sinan, and Justin is from the state of Maryland. Now, when a lot of people think of Maryland, they don't think of big whitetails. However, certain parts of Maryland are really good, and Justin kind of talks about that today. He talks about how he accesses property. He talks about his overall strategy and his use of trail cameras to locate and get himself within shooting range of a big suburban buck. And it's a pretty interesting story. It's something that I'm completely green to. I've never hunted in a suburban setting at all. And it's something that I think I would find quite interesting if I ever gave it a try. But I'll leave that to the East Coasters. I'll take my farms. They can take their backyards. But nonetheless, it was a great conversation. And I'm looking forward to you guys to hear it. I can't talk right now. Anyway, today's commercial. If you haven't heard me talk about Ripcord Arrow Rests, then you need to go check out ripcordarrowrest.com. Take a look at all of the rests that they offer. Now, as a bow hunter, I want a product that is dependable, and especially an arrow release, right? Excuse me, an arrow rest. If it gets wet, if it gets cold, if it gets hot, if it gets bumped, it needs to work no matter what. And Ripcord has worked for me for God knows how many years I've used it. It's been like 10 years or more that I've used a Ripcord. And I very strongly suggest you at least go take a look at the rest they offer. It's an American-made company. It's a veteran-owned company. And they just make some badass gear, and I think you guys need to go check it out. So go check out ripcordarrowrest.com. Now let's get into today's podcast with Justin Sinan. All right, everybody. I am here with Justin Sinan. How you doing, man?
Doing excellent. How you doing, Dan?
I'm doing pretty good. Like I mentioned before we started recording, I just had an ice cream sandwich to hold me over until supper tonight, so I'm good to go.
Can't beat that.
No, you can't.
Can't beat that. No, sounds good right about now.
I know. So today we are going to talk a little bit about where you hunt, how you hunt, and some of the success that you've had over the years. And you hunt in a pretty unique situation. You're what many would call a suburban bow hunter, and we'll talk about that. But before we get into the meat and potatoes of this podcast, why don't you tell me where you're from and what do you do for a living?
I am from an area that's just above or just below Pennsylvania, right on the border almost, in Maryland, right near Westminster. And I am an HVAC service technician.
Gotcha. So does that keep you busy throughout the whole year?
It's actually excellent for a hunter because, you know, your downtimes are in the spring and fall. So it's usually kind of nice. We do, it's you know, not so urgent. You know, you can cut out of work a little bit early here and there, and you can still flip some time in to go hunting. So,
gotcha.
When you're an obsessed bow hunter, you know, you gotta pick a right career. You know what I mean?
That's right. I always kind of refer back to a guy I know who works in road construction, and he works a lot of hours throughout the summer and the early fall, and starts back up into the spring after the ground thaws out. And then mid to late October every year, he gets laid off, and then he collects some kind of workers' comp or layoff pay or unemployment from November, December, January, and February. And then when March hits, they start going back to work and do cleanup and stuff. So he gets the entire hunting seasons off, and he chases deer in multiple states. He shotgun and bow and rifle, and so he's got it made.
Yeah, you can't beat that, right?
That's right. That's right.
I have a few friends that do landscaping, and they try and capitalize on the same kind of deal where, you know, they get off work in the fall and they're not being paid, and they're out there killing, making me jealous, you know?
Right.
But I get my time in too, you know. It's luckily, I try to be able to get off work and slip out there when I can.
Right. Right. So let's talk a little bit about this suburban bow hunting, because I've had multiple people on the podcast before, who I would put into that category, right? They're hunting very small parcels in very heavily
right.
populated areas. Does that kind of categorize you?
Sometimes, yes, I would say the small parcel stuff. For me, I try to, capitalize on places where people haven't already asked. And believe it or not, that's a tough task nowadays. There's a whole lot more people, I think, knocking on doors now than when I started maybe like 6 or 7 years ago.
Yeah.
But it's just something that started small. You know, I didn't start out hunting as a suburban hunter. I started out with my dad. We hunted a nice farm that was on the Eastern Shore, and it was, you know, about like 120 acres, and it was just paradise. I mean, it was a perfect place to kill mature deer. But back then, you know, when you're a beginning hunter, you just want to shoot whatever comes out. So right. It was an excellent place for me to start hunting, and I loved it. And unfortunately, like 2 or 3 years into me hunting, when I started, I was about 12. So right when I started getting to the point where like I wanted to chase big bucks, we lost that property. The homeowner passed away, and it was like a family friend of ours. And they were more into duck hunting than deer hunting. And, you know, so basically the farm got split up. The sons, you know, said, well, we'd rather be millionaires than be hunters and, you know, whatever. So they split the farm up and we lost it. And it kind of, you know, it was pretty upsetting because my dad didn't really, he just kind of like gave it up in a sense. And for me, I just loved it. Something happened when I shot like my first 8-point buck. I just looked at it and I was like, oh man, does it get any better than this? You know what I mean?
Right,
it's just one of those feelings. And it was kind of tough. I was like, you know, Dad, like, why don't we go out here? So I got my driver's license, you know, when I was 16, and I'm like, well, hell, now, I mean, I can go out and go hunting whenever I want. So I started hunting public land, and, I had some luck, you know. I just got into bow hunting then when I got my driver's license. And, I guess I would say I got the bug kind of, you know, with bow hunting, and, I shot a couple does, I shot a couple of smaller bucks, but I really wanted to shoot something mature. And, it just started clicking, and, I started getting on to some of these bigger deer, and I was over.
Well, let's slow down a second.
An ex-girlfriend of mine.
Let's slow down a second.
Okay.
Because I got some questions about back in the day. So when this property sold, right, this 120
right.
acres you were talking about, this is what I find interesting is I've had some people that I know who hunted a awesome farm. Then they
they either fell into it or their dad or uncle or brother used to hunt it, which they got grandfathered into, and then they hunted it, and then they lost it. And now they don't hardly hunt at all because they don't want to go look for new land. They can't necessarily afford a lease. They don't feel comfortable knocking on doors. So they just they just quit hunting. And I can't even comprehend that, right? So if I got if I got kicked off my main farm, the first thing that I would do is go on a knocking spree throughout, you know, the area. Now, why is that kind of what happened with your dad, or did he just like was never really into hunting in the first place?
I would say he was more of the gun hunter. You know, he had that older mentality. Like, he liked to gun hunt a lot. And for us, I mean, where we lived, we could gun hunt, but they're just where we actually live at, you know, is a small farm and everyone shot everything. So there was really no mature deer. And I guess for him, it just wasn't much of a turn on, you know, like, I mean, he shot plenty of deer and he was enjoying chasing like 140 to 160 class deer, and it just kind of disappeared. So for me, I looked at it like, well, I'm going to try and do it. You know, I want to get out there. And public land near where I lived at was very over hunted. You know, it was one of those things. I probably could have killed a mature deer now, knowing what I know now, but back then it was a real task. You really had to put a lot of miles back in the woods. And, I just wasn't there at that time, you know, with my knowledge and skills and stuff. And I missed a couple of real nice bucks at the bow, and that's what really like clicked it for me. I was like, I need to focus on shooting my bow and getting good at shooting.
Right.
And the next couple of years that followed, it just kind of happened by accident. I was at a ex-girlfriend of mine at the time, and I used to ride dirt bikes a lot. Well, she lived semi near a, you know, suburban area. But there was a bigger section of woods. Okay. There was a big plot of, you know, of land that you could not hunt at all. So I took my dirt bike back there, and, I ran across like four different, you know, Pope and Young bucks. It was during the rut, like during, you know, November, but it was a real nice day. And I was like, holy shit, look at all these deer in here. So I said, okay, well, here's three houses that border this stuff. So I said, okay, well, why don't I just go knock? Well, two of the people were like, no way. And then the one older lady said, oh, that would be excellent. Shoot them all. You know? So I said, awesome. I went back there, and, man, I came across like probably a 160 to 170 big 10. And it shook me up. And, he came in, and I waited about 45 minutes to get to me, and I didn't have the shakes or anything then. And by the time I drew back, it was almost dark. I mean, I still had legal shooting light, but, I couldn't see through my peep, and I missed him. I shot just under him at like 25 yards, and it was heartbreaking. It really put in motion like, okay, there's a giant deer right here within a half hour of where you live. And, you know, okay, now what are you going to do about it? So I went back, I started shooting my bow like religiously. I got really good at shooting. And I went ahead and just went ham on knocking on doors. I went and picked up like four or five properties that year. And I ended up taking I took my first nice Pope and Young buck. I guess he was like 125. He was a real nice nine, but oh man, you know, your first nice buck with a bow, you can relate. It's just like, there's nothing like it. So, all right, you know, so I'm on a roll.
Hold up.
Okay.
All right. I know you're excited, man, but I got some questions I want to ask about this whole timeline, because when you were riding your dirt bike back in there, right, and you saw all these deer,
right,
the first idea was, okay, I need to start knocking on some doors around this area to see if I can hunt on their property. Now, when you knocked on the two individuals' door, and they said no, did they give you a reason why, or was it just, no, I don't believe in hunting?
back, I've knocked on so many doors, Dan, I couldn't tell you what they said. Honestly, I want to say they were just like, get off my property. Like, they weren't happy that I was there, and they liked the deer.
Gotcha.
And the lady that did give me permission, I'll never forget her, but she was just like, welcomed me, you know? It was, yeah, like, awesome. I'm like, why haven't I done this before, you know? And
yeah,
I guess it's just all the, you know, your personality, if you can approach people like that, because, I mean, I'm not in sales. But I'm a nice guy, and, you know, I wasn't out there to be a pain in their ass. And I straight up said that. I was like, hey, I'm sorry to bother you.
Yeah.
But, you know, I know that there's a lot of deer around here, and I'm willing to take care of a couple deer for you, and I'll help you out, you know, if yeah, you'd like that. And she was just welcomed me with open arms. It was excellent. And I don't have that property anymore now, but, you know, that was just, it was a special place. And it just led to, you know, knocking in other places. And then I started looking at aerials, you know, and that's where you've probably heard plenty of people say, you know, look on Google Maps, or now you have OnX. But back then, you know, I just had Google Maps. So, and a lot of people were like, unheard of. They looked at me like, you look on Google Maps? And I'm like, yeah, man, this is, you can look at it, you know, yeah, it's obvious.
Yep.
There's this giant plot of woods, you know, right here that you can hunt. So how do you kill big deer? Well, you know, you go after age class of bucks. Well, if you're trying to kill a big buck on public land, how many deer reach maturity? You know what I mean? And how many of those mature deer are like nocturnal for the most part?
Yeah.
So I looked at
process,
it like,
your thought process was more along the lines of, okay, I've hunted public land. I don't like what's there. I want something bigger. I want something from an age class and an antler
yes,
standpoint. So then as you start knocking on doors and you got permission to, you know, hunt that lady, that one lady's farm, you had that encounter with this big buck, and then you said you started going crazy. How many other properties did you pick up on that first year, knocking on doors, trying to get permission? How were you received? I mean, did people talk with one another, like neighbors talk and say, yeah, this guy, he knocked on my door, man, he's wanting to kill some deer or anything like that. Did you get a reputation at all?
Yeah. And maybe not a reputation, but I did have a couple people that have said, you know, and to this day, you still hear the same thing. Oh, well, I would like you to hunt, but I don't know how my neighbors would feel about it. So I'm just going to say no. And, you get a little bit of everything, you know, it's just like people in this world. It's like, you know, some people are just, when they get home, they're just, you know, mad at the world. And then other people will welcome you and say, hey, look, you know, that's awesome. You know, obviously there's a deer problem. Go ahead and take a couple deer, you know, yeah, you're not going to bother me. But I would say I started the first year I went ham and just started knocking on all these doors in like small areas that I thought mature deer were hanging out.
Right.
And then as time progressed, I started looking at it like, okay, I need to get in different areas so I can not overpressure these small parcels. So basically I would try, and in the first year, it's kind of, you know, you don't really know as much about the land, but, you know, after having some of these properties consistently over years and having cameras, you know, you really learn like when the deer are using the property. You know, it's just, it all varies. And like, I've got some places that are hot as hell in, you know, early season, and then they're done.
Right.
And I've got other places that are just, you know, hopping during the rut, and then they're done. And then others that are just late season. So, you know, you got to feel out your properties. That's the one thing with, you know, small parcels of land, it's even harder to have deer there consistent. And you had mentioned, the first lady, if it was a farm, it wasn't a farm. It was just basically, she had, the way the lay of the land was, it was just a nice small funnel that ran through her yard that these deer were going back and forth from big land to, you know, this almost like connects into the city, almost not really the city, but you know what I'm saying? Like
right,
another place where no one can hunt. So I was catching deer that, you know, were crossing between state land and rural, or you know how I'm saying it, kind of like that. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
They had a from reason the country to cross to the through city. There, so right.
Okay. So it sounds to me like the people that allowed you to hunt on their property didn't like the deer. Did they give you a reason why they gave you permission to hunt? Were they damaging landscaping? Were they like tearing up their yard? Did they give you reasons, or did they just say yes?
Yeah, a lot of them would damage their yards. The other reason was they were so, you know, prevalent, where there's so many deer in their yard, and they're like, you know, we need to do something about this.
Right. Were they,
so, I was kind of the solution to their problem. I guess, you know, it just lucked out that I knocked on some of these people's doors that weren't really sure what to do about them.
Gotcha. Is there any type of complaint system in the area? Let's say like deer start destroying landscaping, eating flowers, and I don't know, destroying yards and crapping all over the place, or getting hit by cars. Do they have like any type of system in place where they will call the DNR or anything like that, that you know of?
Not that I know of. There's a couple DNR agents that have mentioned to me over the years that, you know, people have called and complained about the deer, but for some reason they're not doing anything to help it out. I mean, they put deer signs up, but yeah. You know, that's not really going to help out.
Right. Okay. So then the next question is, as you start gaining access to more of these properties around these neighborhoods in this area, did you ever run into any other hunters who were trying to or doing the same thing that you were doing?
Yeah. It's pretty funny you mentioned that, because I guess my first year, I never encountered a hunter. I guess I would say the third year, I noticed a truck that was at my hunting spot, and I was like, son of a bitch, this guy's in my shit, right? So I walk in the woods, I'm not in camo, and this asshole was sitting in my tree stand. And I'm like, hey, buddy, you know, what are you doing? He's like, what are you doing? I looked at him like, get the hell out of my tree stand, you know? And he's sitting there in a tree stand, not trying to come down. And he's like, do you have permission to hunt here? And I looked at him and I like just laughed. I'm like, do you have permission to hunt here? You know, we're just going back and forth. And he's like, yeah. I'm like, I do too. Just come down here. I'm not going to yell at you 25 feet in a tree.
Yeah.
You know, and he came down, and, you know, I couldn't be upset at him. You know, the homeowner, that was just, you know, something I didn't think the homeowner would give another person permission.
Right.
But that's really the only time I've had, you know, another instance, you know, a few years ago, where I harvested a deer and another hunter had already passed this deer, and he gave me shit online, you know, saying, oh, well, you shot that deer on this land. And I'm like, it didn't have your name on it, guy, you know, and some other choice words, but you just go with the flow, man. I guess that's the one frustrating part with suburban hunting. It's, yeah. You got to go into it knowing you're not the only guy out there. But, you know, the juice is worth the squeeze, right. I would say.
Because it sounds to me like in some way, shape, or form, what you're describing is a giant no hunting, right? Obviously, there's no hunting in this big block of timber. How many acres is that block of timber that you can't hunt?
Oh, probably like 2,000 or 3,000 acres.
Oh, boy. Okay.
And it's almost like Texas, which is, it's real low brush and thicket. And it's wild. It's a cool area.
So it's perfect. It's perfect deer habitat.
Yes. Yeah. And pines, and it's great, man.
Right.
And, you can do a little bit of any kind of hunting you want in there, really. Spot and stalk, you know, run and gun, hang and hunt.
In that area.
There's not too many oaks, but yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And there is public hunting in there, but it's limited. Like, you know, there, I would say maybe 30% of it is open to hunting, and then the rest of it is just for, like, nature trails and
okay, I got you.
Bike paths, You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So is there a draw system that's involved with some of the hunts that go on in there?
Well, Maryland, they've got like a special thing you can get. It's called like a managed hunt permit or whatever, and you pay an extra $30. And then, yes, you basically go to the DNR and you give them your license and everything. And some of the hunts that they have set up, like you can only apply, you have to apply ahead of time, or you have to get there and sign up, and they only allow 5 hunters per area a day. And, and then you're dealing with other hunters, and God knows how many other people have been in that spot. You know, you're limited. So,
right.
You know, you can get it done, but it's public hunting. You know, you take it as you can get it. I mean, if you really want to put it in, I'm sure you could do it.
Right.
But for me, I'm kind of, I'm just going with the flow. It's easier for me to get off work and go hop in a set that I hung, you know what I mean? And be quiet.
Yeah. So on these smaller parcels of, I guess, private land that you gain access to, you kind of mentioned that on one of the pieces of property was kind of a funnel that leads out of that into something else. What are the food sources that these deer are leaving that quote unquote sanctuary? They're leaving that, coming out and going into these backyards, so to speak. What are they eating?
It depends on the year. Some of them, if you can find an oak flat, I mean, you're set. There's, scattered apple trees, there's grasses. There's really not that much crops around, in these areas. It's kind of different. In some of the smaller parcels I have that are like 3 to 5 acres, I'll put corn out, cause it's legal, so I'll put some corn out and then I'll monitor the area. And like, as of like right now, I got 10 different spots. So, here we are, preseason, I'm scouting out where my biggest deer's at, and I'll try and target that buck.
Right.
And that's one thing that's really fun, is being able to, target a specific deer and take them out. And right. I've had a couple deer that I've watched for years and years, and it's fun,
Yeah.
You can't beat that.
Right. So let's talk about that process, right? So driving around and knocking on doors, you get access to these properties. What drives what? Are you just knocking on doors and getting access, then seeing if the property's good? Or are you driving around, maybe doing some glassing at night, looking in these people's backyards from the road, doing some glassing? And then coming in and knocking on a door? Or how do you know whether or not you want to hunt that property?
Well, anymore, I've got a young little daughter, so I know you can relate to this. I don't have quite as much time as I want to go scout and do stuff like that, like visually scouting. More or less, I let my cameras do the scouting for me. And in areas that I go and look, I'll survey them on Google Maps, and I'll know just from the areas that I'm looking in, I know that there's mature deer in there. So it's more or less, let me go and knock here. This is a good little pinch point here. And then I'll go and maybe go like a mile down the road and go try and get another little access point, like at the end of a cul-de-sac or something like that. Okay. And I'll put cameras. Let's say I get 3 or 4 spots out of, let's say you're looking at a big patch of woods and it's a circle. I'll try and get to the fringes, and then I'll put cameras in each of those places and see what is in what areas. And, sometimes you'll get deer that travel and you'll be able to see where they're going, and it can help you target them even better. You know what I mean?
Right. Right. So
to kind of answer what you were asking, I mean,
yeah. I mean,
yes, I have visually seen bucks and been like, damn, I need to get in there. And I've done that a couple times, but more times than not, I'm looking on Google Maps and saying, this is a good spot right here. I just know, and just going off of instinct. And a lot of times it pans out.
Gotcha. So then, once you get access to those properties, you put trail cameras up, I take it, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That's what I usually go for.
So are you just hoping a deer walks in front of them? Because I think Maryland's a baiting state, right?
Yeah, you can. In the summer, I'll do minerals. And then, you know, as fall goes in, I'll do more, you know, like some corn here and there, and I'll just feel it out. You know, I might go dump like 100 pounds of corn and just see if there's anything, you know, around.
Gotcha.
Some areas, you know, it's hit or miss, you know what I mean? You're not always going to get a mature deer on camera. But so when it's during the rut, you know, you can kind of hit or miss.
When you dump that corn though, does that draw the deer in? I mean, does that do a good job of drawing the deer in so you can see what is in the area?
For the most part. And I mean, really in some of these places, you know, you'll have acorns and stuff like that and they'll come in, but to get them to come in more consistently, I'll put corn in there, especially if there's a real good buck, I'll try and put more corn in, you know, consistently. And just, if I can pattern him, then I'll go in and kill. If he's just hanging out every once in a while, I'll try and like look for fronts. And, you know, if I can put some corn in there, and I'll go hunt a front and hopefully it'll show up.
Right.
But you know, that's not the only kind of hunting that I try to do. Like, you know, it is kind of an easier way to get your buck, but you know, in the rut, I'll go to decoys and stuff like that also, and just try and get up high. And if I see any deer nearby, I'll grunt at them or, you know, rattle a little bit. And I've had a lot of, you know, deer come in and react to the decoys. Nothing that I've wanted to kill, but a ton of like nice 2 and 3 year old bucks. So
yeah,
it always makes it more fun. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. So we never really did talk about the terrain. You know, when I think of a neighborhood, I think of just a bunch of flat land. Is there any terrain features in this area? Because you mentioned kind of a funnel one time. I didn't know. Is it overall hilly? Is it flat?
It's not like mountains.
Right.
Yeah, it's not like mountains, but there is a lot of like high and low funnels and valleys and stuff like that. It's kind of a cool place because once you have valleys and stuff like that, you can key in on different areas. And that's another thing I'll try and set cameras up on, you know, funnels or places like that where I've got like a heavy deer crossing. And that way you don't have to put corn out in every place. You know what I mean? But
yeah,
when it's like a flat area, you kind of have to do something to get them in front of your camera.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess my question is, knowing that deer where I live don't come out on early season till about, you know, 15 minutes maybe before sundown, before dark, you know, they're right at the last light making their way to a field edge. That's why I typically hunt inside the field edge in what I call a staging area. And then I noticed that deer in suburban areas tend to come out a little bit earlier. Is that a true statement, or how do you see that play out where you hunt?
Sometimes, I don't know. These little critters can be kind of difficult, man. I feel like every year I'm right on the verge of like taking this buck literally like to the day. And, when they lose their velvet, they're just like, they go back in their caves. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They just relocate. It really can be frustrating. Like I've hunted on one parcel trying to get one deer. And then while I'm hunting right there, the like number two hit list or number three, like he'll show up on camera in my other spot. I'm like, damn it. Like I haven't really been able to capitalize, in early season. I could have plenty of times on nice 3 year old bucks, but I try to keep a standard at like, you know, if at least four,
right.
It's one of those things. I've just been so close. Like I'll have them on camera consistently and then they elude me, you know?
Right.
Last year I had a giant nine, come in the day before season. I didn't even go in there. I just noticed after I checked my camera and, I went in there and hunted. I had a perfect wind. We had a front and, bam, he was just like disappeared.
Yeah.
And then come to find out he's on my buddy's camera. That's like a mile away. I'm like, son of a bitch. You know, what do you do?
Right.
What do you do?
How long how far, I should say, do you think some of these deer travel? Do they stick pretty close? Obviously, the rut can change everything, but, you know, what would you say their core area is?
I would say I know for a fact, if you can figure out one of these deer's home range, you've got a lot better chance of killing them. For me, I put some cameras in some places, like maybe that you're not allowed to hunt, but I know where these deer are chilling at. The deer I killed last year was a deer I chased for 3 years. And I mean, I knew where he was at. I knew exactly what he was doing. And, I just waited for him until the rut to try and kill him. Cause I knew there's no way I'm going to be able to go in and get him where he is. So during the rut, I was like, he's going to hit these funnels looking for does. And I got in between two bedding areas and was able to capitalize on him. But yeah, it really helps if you can figure out where they're at. You know, if you've got a lot of land, it's hard to, it might be harder to pinpoint, but this was one of those places where, you know, he didn't have quite as much area to go and get away, you know? So I was like, all right, well, if you're there, then you're going to go over here. You know what I mean? It's just simple. Like, you don't really have too many places to go, buddy, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
As long as I didn't push him out of there. I mean, sure, if I would have went in after him, I'm sure I would have pushed him away and he would have went somewhere. But as long as you're kind of smart and, you know, you try to play the wind and you don't really put too much pressure on it, it can pay off for you.
How important are access routes when you're hunting these really small properties?
They're really important. I try to mix up what I do. You know, I don't really want to, and more or less in the past couple of years, I've learned your best bet is to go and hunt one time and try and kill them. From listening to, you know, to you and Mark and, Dan Infault and, you know, just learning more about deer and beds and, you know, stuff like that. I really got into just trying to kill it, just go and hunt, I guess, at the perfect time to try and, you know, capitalize. Right. And, if I'm not doing that, then I try and go have fun. Like I enjoy just shooting deer, to be honest with you. I have fun shooting does. And I try and separate what I'm doing that day. Like if I'm trying to kill a buck in early season, I'm not going to, you know, go take a doe or anything. But it's just one of those things, you know, you really want to focus on the one day or the two hunts and then leave it alone. Like don't overpressure them, because if you use the wrong entrance or access, you can bump them out of there and you might not see them.
Right. So are some of these big, more mature bucks that it sounds like you're going after in these suburban settings, do they only pop their head out in daylight just a couple times, or is it different for every buck? Because it sounds to me like some of these... Go ahead.
No, it depends. I feel like they're like people, kind of. Some of them, they've each got their own personality. I've got some that come out during daylight all the time. And then once season comes in, even though like I'm pretty sure this deer wasn't being hunted by anybody else, but they just know, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Where other ones will come out during daylight, just at the break of daylight or, you know, just after or just before dark. And I don't know about you, but for me, I don't hunt the mornings in early season. Like most of my places are bedding areas. And like you said, with access, I could go in there in the morning and I'll blow every deer out of the woods. So why do that? You know what I mean?
Yeah. With some of these properties and how small they are, and, you know, sounds to me like deer are running through these neighborhoods, that there is a lot more human interaction with them than, let's say, the deer that I hunt out in the, you know, the farm fields of Iowa. But do you get a second chance with some of these deer? Meaning what I mean by that is if they bust you, whether it's from scent or from sight or whatever, because they're so used to humans, do they know they're being hunted? Do they know? Do they just blow it off?
Most definitely. Yeah. You bump one in the woods, depending on the situation. Like I've had a couple of them look up and, you know, like skylight me in a tree, never seen them again. I've shouted some of them and missed, never seen them again.
Yeah.
They are freaking smart. I'm not kidding you. I don't want to say that, you know, it's like they're smarter than, you know, what you're dealing with in rural places, but they're extremely, edgy. Like even when they come in, I mean, they're like looking around, looking up there. Since they know that people are around, they're even more on edge, I would say.
Right.
So there's certain times you can get away with, you know, a little bit of, you know, your scent, but it depends. I've got some places where like these does will just, if they smell anything, they're gone.
Yeah.
And then I've got another place where there's people that walk through the woods all the time. And then I've watched bucks just freeze and watch people walk by, but you come in the woods in camo and a bow and you're like, they're like, fuck that. We know who you are. You know what I mean? And, right. And they're rolling out. They're like, I've seen one of you. You took Aunt Susie, you took Uncle Bob, you know?
Gotcha.
So
they know. So let's talk about, let's talk about this big, I'm looking at your Facebook picture. And it's this big, wide 8-pointer that you shot. Was that from last year?
Yeah. Last year was definitely like my best season I've ever had.
Okay, so let's walk through that. Tell me that story.
So that I got 2 wide 8-points last year. The first one that I got, the one that you're talking about, we'll start with him. That was actually on a lease that I have. It's my first lease I've ever bought. I had a good friend of mine hit me up. This lease is like 10 minutes from my house. And he's like, look, man, his dad, you know, couldn't make it out to that lease. They had other places. Like he's into leasing a lot of properties. And I told him, I'm like, man, I'm getting kind of the sick of the suburban stuff a little bit. You know, I want to do something different. You know, I never gun hunt. And it'd just be nice to have somewhere to go relax close to home and be able to go gun hunting still. And he told me about this deer, and he's like, look, there's a really wide 8 that's over here. And he said he had a couple encounters with him last year. So I was busy chasing other bucks, you know, in suburban with a bow like all season. So I was like, well, I'll just save that for gun season and, you know, just go hit that up. And then that way I'll have a totally unpressured farm, you know, and it's mostly ag. It was a nice little valley with a cornfield in it. And, we waited, they cut the cornfield. And I went in there and that morning I actually went out there and I missed him. I think it was him. It was a really, really cold morning and he was like the first deer out in the field. And I was like, holy shit, that's a giant deer. And, I waited and I fogged my scope up cause I was waiting and I'm breathing heavy. And I mean, I got ice crystals on my rifle barrel. It was cold. So I'm like, shit, I'm trying to clean my scope and I missed regardless. So that was kind of a tough, one to get over. And I was like, I'm going to go back in cause I didn't really spook the deer too much. I went back in there and he came out. It was that full moon, that was in December. It was a really big moon. I was like, you know, there's a good chance he's going to come back out. And, he came out like 280 yards or something like that, I think. And I smoked them and it was pretty cool. So that one kind of fell in my lap. That was like a little bit lucky, you know, for sure.
Yeah.
But he was like 22 inches inside, just a really nice 8. And I couldn't have been happier with him, man. I mean, it's one of the widest bucks I've ever killed.
Man, he's got decent brows
and,
too.
Yeah, he was really cool.
I'd probably shoot that buck every year.
Yeah, no doubt. That's what we're out there to do, right? You know, for me, I don't care. I want to shoot a mature deer. That's one thing I'll say about you, Dan. Like, I really respect that. You're like, I'm out here to kill a mature deer. I don't give a shit about the rack, which you do at the same time. But you know what I mean?
Yeah, but his body,
and,
his body looks big, too.
Oh, yeah. He was, I think he dressed right around like 200 or something.
Nice.
For around here, that's a pretty big deer.
Right.
And, you know, so what were you going
to
say?
So now that was your gun season buck, but it looks to me like you should.
Right.
So now we're talking about the other big 8 that his main beams curve in. Right.
Right. Right. So, that was a buck. Go ahead.
Yeah. Tell that story.
Okay. So that was a buck that I nicknamed Splits. I was trying to kill him, you know, for the past 3 years. It started off, I got him in a suburban spot, and he was a real nice 9-point. I had pictures of him all summer, and he disappeared, and I was like, oh, man, you know, I never found him. I went shed hunting, never found a shed, and I was like, oh, whatever. Put a camera back in the same place, and he showed up the next year, and I was like, holy crap, look at this thing. I mean, he was this big old 10 with the split G2 and big brows. And, oh, I loved it. I ate it up. Every time I go get that camera, man, I was like, oh, I hope he's on here. And he was, you know, he was like Hollywood. He was all over the camera.
Yeah.
And I never got an opportunity at him last year, but he was on my camera more in one of my spots that I had permission in. So I said, I'm like, well, you know, I got a good chance of killing him. There's a place that I literally knocked on the door to kill this buck. And I didn't take anything out of there that first year that I had the property. So now we're at, you know, the season last year where I killed him and had tons of pictures of him. He actually shrunk to an 8-point. So I'm not sure how old he was, but I'm guessing he was really old. And had a ton of pictures of him in early season. And we got to about November, like late October, and I got a couple pictures of him, and I was like, oh shit. And it was during daylight, and I'm like, oh boy, here we go. And I ended up, you know, I said to myself, here we are in beginning of November. I waited for the right time to go in there and hunt. I put a little bit of corn down, and you know, I was like, you know, here we are in the rut. Hopefully he'll be chasing does, or, you know, if he's hungry and he wants something, he'll come down in there and eat some corn. And I hunted, it was November 4th. We had that full moon, and it was perfect, man. I waited, I was going to hunt all day long, and it got to, there wasn't much deer movement in the morning, got to like 10 o'clock, and I heard a stick break like back behind me, and I looked, and all I see is tines, and I'm like, oh boy. All right, so I grabbed my bow. The way he was coming in, he was coming through some laurel in this funnel. And I was like, right when he clears there, he'll be like right at like 20 yards. And man, he just like textbook just stopped at 20 yards on his own. And I drilled him, and he went about 60 yards and fell over. And I about fell out of my tree stand. I was shaking like a leaf, man. It was so cool. It was like shooting my first buck again. I don't know how else to put it. And I called my buddy. I'm like, man, I got him. I said it was either him or that other real nice 9 that I had on camera. And right as I'm telling him, he shoots a nice buck. And I'm like, holy shit, this is awesome. So he just shot a real nice one. And I went down and looked, and I was like, man, it's him. It splits. And I got to say, man, I've never had a better feeling, you know, maybe other than like my first deer. But it was so cool. And hopefully it's just not the same this year, though. You know, after taking a buck like that, I don't know. Have you ever like been able to chase a buck for like 3 or 4 years or anything like that?
Oh yeah. I've chased multiple deer, and although I didn't harvest, some of them, you know, they either got shot by other hunters or they kind of just disappeared. But, I've never followed a buck for 4 years and then was successful on them. I followed them, but never was able to harvest them.
Right.
So you're telling me that's,
yeah,
that's
I lucked
different.
Out, man. I feel blessed. I mean, really. Yeah.
You're telling me that's different then.
What's that? It's different.
Different, it's a feeling.
It's almost, I don't want to say like, it's not, I wasn't sad. But it was just one of those feelings. Like I remember just coming up to this deer, and I'd never done this before, but I just sat on the ground in the woods and just like looked at him, and I was just, it was just cool as hell. You know, I don't know how else to describe it. It was just, I'd watched that deer for so long. And, you know, some of my friends are like, you're nuts, man. You know, like, what are you, you know, why are you upset? And I'm like, well, I'm not upset. It's just different. You know, he's not there to chase, you know, the woods feel different without him in there, you know?
Yep. Absolutely.
But, it's awesome, man. I hopefully I'll be able to do it again someday. I do have one that I've been chasing for another 3 years now in another spot, but, we'll see. He's been cat and mouse too. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So you have pictures of them already this summer?
No, I don't. Not of the one that I'm thinking of. I've been kind of leaving that place alone. Usually I don't get any pictures of them until like October. So I'm just kind of leaving that place alone till then. Yeah. That's the one thing I've learned. The more you leave these places alone, the better it is, you know, and you just get in there, you do your thing, and you get out.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Well, let me be the first to wish you good luck this upcoming season, man. I really appreciate you taking time to hop on the podcast today and chat with us.
Yeah, no, it was an honor, man. It was great talking to you.
And there you have it, another podcast in the books. Huge shout out to Justin for stopping by and chatting with us today. Huge shout out to all the partners of this podcast: Exodus, Wasp, Lone Wolf, Deer Lab, Prime, Ripcord, Ozonix, and Hunter Safety Systems. If you would do me a favor, please go and support those companies because they support this podcast. Last but not least, please go support the Quality Deer Management Association. Enter the discount code 9FINGER when you check out. That's only finger, so the number 9 followed by the word finger, and you can save $10 on a 1-year membership. So for $25, you can be a part of one of the greatest whitetail organizations in North America, and take a look at what they do. Do your own research, but for $25, man, to be a member of that organization, man, that's a win-win-win if you ask me. So if you haven't already, please go leave a review on iTunes or wherever you download your podcast. Be sure to check out all the other podcasts on the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network. Follow us on social media, Facebook and Instagram. Social media, we do a lot there, man. Just dropped a new vlog about one of the biggest whitetail mistakes I ever made, so please go check that out. And, man, have a good weekend, man. Hopefully you guys get out, either hang trail cameras, check trail cameras, spend some time with the kids. I know I'm going to be going to my wife's 20-year high school reunion. I don't know what to think about it yet, but there is a chance I just do me and I'll have my own fun while she goes and does her thing, and I can talk to anybody. So hopefully there's one guy there at this high school reunion that is a deer hunter, and I can single him out and we can just talk about deer hunting all night. So that's my goal. But enough of that. Have a good weekend. And our friends from Hunter Safety Systems remind us all, if you're going to be in a tree, wear your damn safety harness. Have a good weekend.